One example, though, that stands out above all the others, which is Carl Icahn, who's an old friend of the president's, who has been named his special regulatory advisor. He's not an actual government employee, but he has this special, at least according to the administration, he's got this special advisory role. And he's reportedly had a decisive impact over choosing who would lead the Environmental Protection Agency and the Securities and Exchange Commission, the two parts of the government that most directly relate to his business empire and his investment empire. And of course, we've got a guy running the EPA who is as hostile to the agency as is possible, who's sued it 14 times and aims to destroy it. And we've got a guy nominated to run the Securities and Exchange Commission.
We've got about 10 seconds more. Go ahead.
Who is very likely to adopt rules that will benefit the giant investor, Carl Icahn himself.
Well, Robert Weissman, our president of Public Citizen, thanks for joining us. That does it for today's show. I'm Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us for another edition of Democracy Now!
Good morning. It's 8 o'clock, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. And coming up next on More Talk Radio, host Linda Olson-Osterlund talks with Teresa Rayford of Don't Shoot Portland. Teresa is here to talk about the recent police killing of Quanice Hayes. That's next on KBOO.
Please join us on Saturday, March 25th for an archives database edit-a-thon and party. This event will run from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. We are recruiting current and past KBOO volunteers and listeners who hold knowledge of KBOO's 49-year history, and we are recruiting archivists, librarians, and any other person that enjoys information seeking and data entry to document this collective knowledge. This event is free and open to the public, but we need you to register so we can plan for the event. Find out more by emailing archive@kboo.fm or online at kboo.fm/editparty2017.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the August Wilson Monologue Competition Regional Finals on Monday, February 25th at 7 p.m. at the Newmark Theater in Portland. 12 Portland area high school students will perform monologues from August Wilson 10-play American Century Cycle, and two will be selected to go to the national competition. There will also be a DJ spinning blues, jazz, R&B, and hip-hop. Again, that's the August Wilson Monologue Competition Regional Finals on Monday, February 25th at 7 p.m. at the Newmark Theater, 1111 Southwest Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to KBOO and More Talk Radio. I am not Celeste, and I'm not Cecil, and our guest is not either of them also. So I'm sorry if you're missing them this morning. We hope we'll bring you a program worthy of your listening ears. This is a call-in program, and we want to hear from you. So the number I'm going to give you right now, so you have it at hand, it's 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. And I'm sad to say this morning that we're here in the studio to talk about the death of another young African-American man from Portland. His name is Quanice Hayes, or Quanice Hayes, I believe is how they pronounce it. He was 17 years old. When you listen to friends of his like Shamaya, who was on our evening news, you hear that he lit up the room, that he was warm and friendly, that there was always someone there ready to listen to you and lift you, your spirits up. And that's the same kind of testimony from his family about the role that he played in the side of his family. It makes you want to sob when you know that they've lost this young man. He was shot three times by a police officer that has killed before. His name is Andrew Hurst. And to talk about this latest shooting and the process and what's going on, we're really pleased to bring to you Teresa Rayford of Don't Shoot PDX. You've no doubt heard her on KBOO if you've listened to us before. I want you to be able to address your questions directly to her as well, or your comments. And so once again, I want to remind you, this is a call-in show, 503 231-8187. We really do want to hear from you about this latest of the incidents. One of the things that of incidents, that I even call it an incident, is kind of disgusting. It's not an incident. It's another, you know, shooting of a young man, a real a loss of life. There have been two prayer vigils, and there was a protest last Thursday that had approximately 200 people at it. So I want to talk about, what about our community response? What should we do? Does the police saying they thought he was a suspect in an armed robbery, they don't say they found anything that they thought he stole on him, and they think he had a replica gun that was found somewhere near him. And so far, that's all we can get about what happened to Quanis Hayes. Early in the morning, February 9th, down around 82nd and Hancock. Welcome to the show, Teresa.
Well, thank you, and I'm glad to be here again, and sad to be here because of the subject matter that we're discussing today. And just want to put my heart and my sorrow and thoughts to the family of Quanis Hayes and our whole community.
Yes, and I think one of the things that I want to try to figure out is, where do we go from here? You know, this isn't our first rodeo, as people say. This isn't the first shooting. And they're talking about, you know, it'll be about 4 weeks until there's a grand jury about whether the shooting is considered justifiable or not, whether any criminal charges can be brought against Andrew Hurst. In the past, when we've seen this process fold out, it was almost invisible, but then they did make one of these processes visible, more transparent. You could get the testimony as it was happening at the relatively close to it as it happened at the grand jury. Nonetheless, the results were the same, no charges brought. And I don't believe we've ever once seen charges brought against a police officer for a shooting in Portland.
Yeah, well, what we have to understand about this process is that a lot of times people will say, oh, the arbitrator's ruling was, you know, to exonerate the officer. And, you know, I don't think that we're that familiar with the process when we think like, oh, we didn't get justice because this should have come out a different way. The fact is that justice is dependent upon the language in the collective bargaining agreement and other policies within the city, and the mandates and relationships within the city and the police bureau. So if, in fact, they're working based on the training and the protocol that they're assigned to do, and if the city attorneys are fighting in their defense and basically proving that point, then of course they're going to be exonerated. And when I remember, we were protesting a couple of years ago, and the police president, you know, the union, Daryl Turner, basically told us, like, we're wasting our time protesting. He said, if you guys want to stop police brutality, or if you want to change our policy and these outcomes, then you have to push the will of the commissioners and your mayor to add that language to the collective bargaining agreement, because as it is now, they've all signed it based on the conditions that create the outcome. And
if many of you remember, there was a very strong attempt to change the contract, but Mayor Hale did an end run behind the back of everyone and insisted on getting this contract with the police signed before he went out of office. He acted like he was doing everybody a favor, getting this difficult thing out of the way. But what it did was short-circuit the ability of the public to have the kind of impact that they wanted to have on that. And so we don't have a contract that's substantially better. In fact, it may end up being worse if they do indeed get cameras that only they get to see and they get to review before they have to discuss any shooting that they did.
Absolutely. If we didn't like what we had before, just imagine the administration that's ruling our country's laws and governing and writing these executive orders. That's a whole nother paradigm that's added on to the tension that we're dealing with as activists. And what I've seen is that there's an immediate concern for our ability to protest. I'm you know, like, we protest without permits, and everyone's like, whoa, they're going to protest without a permit. And I'm like, well, have you not listened to the news in the last 24 hours? And do you not know about the memos and the executive briefs on immigrants and how to survey them and giving our local policing forces and different agencies more power to investigate, more power to deport, more power to detain. We don't want to permit because we don't want the assumption of our local officials that we're giving them permission to investigate people that are freely assembling.
Well, and I think there really is no rule for the permit in the Constitution. Do we have any callers yet? We do have one. It is Tyler. Thank you for calling in.
Hi, how's it going?
It's good. Good to hear from you. What would you like to say?
I wish it was under better circumstances, but I mean, another tragedy is pretty bad.
Yep.
One thing, two things, is I know there's like a live Facebook app or something going on with live Facebook. How come the police can't have like a live feed directly to the public so that people can watch this?
Oh, I think that's an interesting question, isn't it? Yeah, because, you know, it's true that I've, gone on Facebook and caught a live stream coming from some protest in L.A., or I actually got to see a long one on Ferguson. And wouldn't it be interesting if we made all the cops, we could have a special, channel to just go watch what the cops are doing. But I make it like a joke, but actually, if they had to live stream what they're doing, it would change their behavior considerably.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely.
They know that they're watched in the moment right then, that they're there's eyes on them.
Yes, and they can't get away with saying and doing the really despicable things that they do. I heard again recently, and I'm sorry, I'm not going to have the backdrop of this for you, but of a man who was shot by the police, and the police claimed all these extensive things, and the next thing you know, you see this video that directly contradicted the police, mm-hmm. and then they started changing their stories. And we know that that's so often the truth, and the whole point of body cameras would have been protect the public, to have accountability for the police and to protect the public, but that's not what they're going to use them for if they get them.
No, I noticed on October 12th when we were being, assaulted at City Hall, that they were capturing video, and then they were sitting right in a room that was facing the street where we were at, and I'm standing across the street, and they're watching video. And so as they were watching the video, they were coming right back out into the street and then determining who they were going to arrest. And so they're using their own technology that we're paying for to, protect and serve us. They're using it to further violate civil liberties and further investigate people that they don't even have a warrant for.
Well, and I went to the mayor's office and I asked a question, and they did get back to me about it. And I said, what role was Homeland Security playing in the response to protests around Trump? And they said that there was none, that they hadn't had no conversations with Homeland Security around those protests or how to respond to those protests. And they did give me a policeman spokesman that I can call to get more information about that, which I plan on doing. But as you notice, Homeland Security was there the day that you guys were boxed in, mm-hmm. inside City Hall, when they didn't want to hear from the public. And what was Homeland Security doing? If they were on their computer looking at you, Teresa, this is what I can tell you. I've been to one of their fusion centers, mm-hmm. here in, it's out in Clackamas County, and they can, at the moment they have her picture, they can put it through photo recognition, and then in the fusion center, they can pull up everything from the taxes she's paid to the prescriptions she's bought to the houses she's lived in to every phone number she's ever had. They have extensive data on anybody at a moment's notice.
That's too much.
Yeah. And then they don't want us to show up at our protests without masks on, please.
Yeah, they say, why are you wearing those masks? Well, so you can't do photo recognition. And I know that you probably realize when you go to get your driver's license nowadays, they do the retina screen. Mm-hmm. They do the retina scan on your eyes as well, so that they have that for photo recognition.
That's crazy. My other point was, I know that in England and Great Britain, the cops there don't have guns, and they seem to be doing things just fine over there.
Well, I think they're probably just as oppressive if we want to go back to what they did to the Irish during all of those years and what they're doing to Muslims there. I do have some information about that and have talked to journalists there in terms of how...
Well, I mean, but I'm saying...
But
as far as
in terms of on the street, yes.
No public lynchings.
I think you're right about that, Tyler. On the street, there's only special sections of police that go out armed. The regular street police are not armed, at the most with a billy club, but no guns. And certainly that means you see less deaths.
And I mean, that's... I don't see why we can't have that. I mean, it's like, I mean, we see these like shootings, it seems like every day, and I feel like I'm getting desensitized to it. You know, I'm scared. You know, what happens if I see it like in real life, something like that? What would I do?
Yeah, it's crazy.
It
is crazy. And I wish we could turn back, but we seem to be the gun nation, at least owned by the gun industry and the war-making, literally war machines,
yeah.
You know, the mechanisms of war. We seem to be that we're the biggest. We make the most and sell the most in the world.
So I got another question for
sure.
You because it's been boggling my mind, and I can't seem to get an answer to it. So, like, we want to do it nonviolently and peacefully, right? But I mean, what if that doesn't work? When is enough? Like,
well,
you know, you got people with AK-47s and all these different types of guns, and they're ready to kill.
And Tyler, This is the thing, Tyler. Like, we live in America, right? And there's a constitution, which is actually like a contract or a business plan. And what we're supposed to be doing as citizens and what we were doing as protesters since the Mike Brown murder, by protesting police accountability and excessive force, we were trying to bring the community in on what was happening so that they could collectively help us manage to change policy within our city and our municipalities. And so that's the important thing. And what we have to understand is that local leaders shut those voices down. And so now we're post all of that, we're in the Trump world during his administration. Now we're all worried. And the fact of the matter is that the people have the power to change policy. The people have the power to create mandate and to develop influence that would create a better and more safer environment, even including less guns on our streets. But we don't collectively use our voices in order to empower that type of impact. And what ends up happening is that we complain to our leaders. We say, you know, you guys aren't doing anything for us. The fact is that what we have to understand from America now and going forward is we are the leaders. Like, the people that are having these issues, the people that live in the communities, we have to create new trends within our social paradigms that promote education and organizing on all fronts all the time. We have to stop saying that we don't get political, and we have to get excessively political.
You know, Tyler, thanks, Teresa. I have a little different perspective about this. I used to consider myself a revolutionary, meaning that I believed that we as people in an oppressive country had the right to rise up with arms and overthrow our government, but that the only way that that could happen would be if the majority, the masses of people, wanted to do it, because otherwise it's just a little group doing some kinds of terrorist actions or something. And so when I look at today, I actually, the older I've gotten, the more I hate any kind of violence, the more I don't like to be around it. I don't want to see one more person bleeding, one more person dying, one more child losing a parent. And yet I see what you're saying, because if they have the physical power, say what will happen at Standing Rock. Will they drive all of the people in the camps off? What will we do? And I think I will say that they have us outgunned. Mm-hmm. They have us way outgunned when it comes to the actual military apparatus. So I think we have to have the masses. We have to really keep working to infect other people's thinking, to have them realize that we need to have all of us in the streets at certain times. There can come, I believe, a critical mass when even the most oppressive governments have to begin to back mm-hmm. off and fall apart because there's too many of us out there.
That's right.
Yeah. So then when are we going to have a leader, like someone with a platform like Martin Luther King, or, you know, somebody with JFK, somebody with a platform like that that's willing to stand up for the people, willing to try to change this? I mean, you know, I think the main reason why we don't have any leaders right now is because everybody's scared that they're going to die.
Well, that might be a possibility, but the leader might have to be you. I think we're going to have to find our leaders. They're going to be somebody we don't know yet, or they're somebody we've just met. But Tyler,
hey,
I've already said I'm
willing to die.
Well, I'd rather have you willing to live and fight us all the way through.
Yeah, but martyrs don't make good leaders.
Yeah, no, they're just a name.
Hey,
thank you, Tyler. I really appreciate your call. We do have a couple other callers on the line. I want to let them get on. And Dave, you're on the line.
Hi. This is really an important conversation.
I just want to make a little contribution. I was on a grand jury, and I can see why the police are never sent to trial from the grand jury. Mm-hmm. Because when you're sitting there on the grand jury, you're, well, for one thing, the people that are on the grand jury are just people that are able to put in a month. So there are people that work at Intel, or the post office, or the library, or retired. They're just ordinary people. There's no screening or anything like there is with a regular trial. So, okay, so you got a bunch of just ordinary people come up there, and they plunk you down in a room, and it's a pretty informal room, just folding tables, comfortable chairs, but just folding tables and little room. And the DAs instruct you about what you're supposed to do, the district attorneys, the mm-hmm. prosecutors. And then you start hearing cases, and the police come in. The police almost always come in and explain the case. And the way they do it is it's just the prosecution's case that the grand jury hears. You don't hear anything from the defense.
And you're there to decide whether it should go forward to a criminal case, is that right?
To a trial, yeah. Right. The grand jury decides whether it should go to trial, whether they have a good enough case to go to trial. So basically the jurors follow what the district attorneys suggest, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're our leaders, and we just kind of go along with whatever they suggest. Sometimes they'll bring a case that's so lame that some people will resist it. But, excuse me, I got a frog in my throat. So the point is that you can see how the police and the district attorneys are there basically, it's like the quarterback and the end.
They're all set up together.
They're working together to prosecute these cases all the time, day in and day out. They're on the same team.
They probably know just looking at each other how they're going to decide.
Well, it's funny that they don't get that type of teamwork when it comes to prosecuting officers for killing people. And that's in that collective bargaining.
That's the thing. You see that teamwork.
Oh, they do have it.
Not to prosecute is to not prosecute.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's the same thing. We had a case, actually, where a cold case where nobody wanted to prosecute it. And they worked the same way. The police and the DA worked it out to where the jury was we were totally convinced that we shouldn't prosecute this case, and we didn't. So what I'm saying is that
it's a rigged game.
If there's a police that's being charged, the grand jury is no place to go. There needs to be a special prosecutor and a special grand jury or something else. But this system they have now is never gonna indict a cop.
Well, thank you for that, Dave. I think that you've laid that out really clearly for us. Anything you want to say, Teresa?
No, I was going to say that Dave is exactly right. And one of the things that we've done is we've gone back and forth to the state legislator because we want the legislator to appoint that special prosecutor. I know that they have to work with the attorney general and give the power to the governor, but we need that. I think all states across the board need that, especially in the times that we are in now. And I wish we would have done it before the Trump presidency, because it's probably going to be a little harder to achieve that type of goal.
And I think one of the things that's very difficult is that when you're in a jury setting like that and you're getting all of that information only from one side, it's very hard to see another side, and it's hard to begin to see those people as lying to you. I was in a small case, and the defense attorney asked one question. He said, did you make them take off their shoes after you stopped them in their car? And all heck broke loose. I guess we can say hell on radio.
Yeah.
Anyway, all broke loose because, there was all these objections and shut it up and sidebars and go out and we had to leave and da-da-da. And I asked another juror who seemed a little bit more savvy. I said, what's this all about? And he said what she was really stopping him for was drugs, but he didn't have any. They took the shoes off to look for the drugs. So they don't want us to be able to say that they were looking for drugs, and instead they did this traffic stop.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, because we knew what happened, they ended up not winning that case, but the young woman cop that was up on the stand, her outrage at being dared to be asked to, did she ask them to take off their shoes, was amazing, and how quickly everything jumped into place to try to protect what they had been going to do, which was bust this guy on a phony traffic charge because he didn't have drugs on him when they wanted him to.
Well, I had 4 days trial in April of last year for protesting, and the prosecutor and the officers, three officers, basically perjured themselves on the pretrial questions, and they were still allowed to give statements during the trial.
Yes. In fact, as a teenager, I also saw perjury by policemen on just a minor case. And so we know that this happens within it, but yet there is a bias within the public to believe police and prosecutors, especially when you're put in a formal setting. Well, let's go to our next caller. Do we have another caller there? Deanna, thanks for calling.
Thank you very much, both of you. Good morning, Linda, and good morning, Teresa. This is Deanna calling. Teresa, this is fascinating. First of all, Dave's, I never knew this about the grand jury, and I'd be willing to bet a lot of people don't know that. Anyway, your points, both of you, about what we need is to create this tsunami of demand that this all change is absolutely makes sense to me. So here's my question. Is what you suggested, Teresa, that we need to get to our legislators and demand, first of all, that that grand jury business be changed to special prosecutor? And are there other demands that we need to make? And the third part of the question is, we need to educate each other
That's
and ourselves
right.
about this whole thing. And I think that that is something that we are woefully uneducated about how it all works. For example, you mentioned, Teresa, that, you know, the policing policy allows things like what happened to Quanis Hayes. Does that mean that it's okay in the policing policy to shoot a suspect three times?
Absolutely.
Oh, depending on how they frame it, right?
The framing is already in the language. And what I learned through bringing and assisting and advocating for community through the independent police review process is that by the time it's going to citizen review, it's already been seen by the police, the bureau, the auditors, their internal affairs, and they critique what is investigated, and they appropriate the language that's based in their training manuals and their policies. And so if I say, oh, the police hit me in my chest, they'll say they obstructed punishment, or they grabbed an object.
Say
or
that one again.
Something like
say that,
that
one again.
Obstructed punishment on me.
Yeah.
You know, not beating me, but they're just obstructing punishment on a suspect, not a human being. So you frame it and you misplace the language and you just put correct different verbiage, and all of a sudden, oh, you didn't beat to death a person. You just, you know, you used excessive force because that person was threatening or because that person resisted.
Right.
The person might not be resisting. Their body might be, responding to the force.
Absolutely.
But if the cop says that it's resisting or if they felt intimidated, all they have to do is say, I felt intimidated. Mm-hmm. And then now right. I'm within my protocol.
And I think that it would be so important if we could get a special prosecutor for all police shootings. I don't mean one prosecutor. I mean have a special prosecutor appointed every time there is a police-involved shooting.
Absolutely.
That and take it outside of the rest of the scope of it. But we're still going to have to get past the collective bargaining, past the union's deals that they have with, or it'll get overturned in the end.
Well, when we were doing our workshops, we had National Lawyers Guild working with us, and we were doing a grand jury workshop 1 year. And Jennifer Williamson, who's a state rep, actually came to the workshop, and she said, well, if you want to do anything about this process, ask to get rid of the grand jury process.
Oh.
And we know that we're like one of the only states in only cities in the country that has a process that's so disparate to people that are from marginalized communities. So if we really wanted to make a powerful change and to say that we're providing sanctuary and we really want to be progressive, then we would do away with things that are oppressive. I don't see any political will from our leaders stating that. When she said it, I couldn't believe it. But I think
that would be another way. Well, Deanna, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it. I'm going to take a minute now to let people know what's going to be coming up on KBOO. Coming up this morning at 9 on the Old Mole Variety Hour, they'll be talking about Trumpism, fascism, and lessons learned from Standing Rock and court decisions on Trump's Muslim ban. At 10:15 on Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein hosts the director of Public Citizens Energy Program to discuss what happens to the EPA under Trump. At 11 on Radio Zine, Veterans for Peace discuss the departure of Flynn from the Trump administration, and then a celebration of Black History Month with a look back at Muhammad Ali and the Freedom Riders. And then we want to thank all of you KBOO members out there for your generous support. We just finished our last membership drive, and you did such a great job. If you didn't get a chance to become a member or to donate at that time, you still can do it at kboo.fm. In the right-hand corner in a bright red banner, it says donate, and you just need to click, and it goes ever so fast. And that's what keeps the lights on, keeps us answering those phones for you, keeps us being able to call guests like Teresa to have her in. So thank you, all of you who have contributed, and take a chance and do it if you haven't. Now we're going to go back to the phone lines. We have Teresa on the phone. Welcome,
hi,
Teresa.
Teresa.
Go ahead, Teresa.
I was calling because I wanted to mention that the police policy around crowd control was just open for review. It just closed. And that right now special weaponry is up for review by the Portland police. If you go onto the Portland Police website and kind of drill in, you can actually click on their policies, and special weaponry is up for policy review by the public through February 22nd. If you go on Facebook and type in PPB special weaponry, an event page will come up that shares the comments by the ACLU, by Cop Watch, Portland Cop Watch, and by Empower Portland, who is running the event page. And you can see what comments they have framed, and it shares the link so you can fly directly to the police page and comment on their use of pepper spray, on their use of CS gas, on their use of exploding grenades with pellets coated in level 3 Saber Red.
Yes.
Thank you so much for bringing this to our attention. Say it all again. Like if I was not, if I wanted to go to Facebook to find a page that would give me this information, what would I put in my Facebook search?
You would put PPB, the initials of Portland Police Bureau, PPB, special weaponry.
Okay.
Comments, period.
Okay.
Now, would she put that on Facebook, or would she put that on when she gets to the
Facebook
page? Okay.
And then
on
if we
Facebook
wanted to go to the Portland Police's website itself, we would look for their policies, and then under policies there would be special weaponry.
You can also go on copwatch.org. If you don't Facebook, you can go on copwatch.org and find the link there.
What would they be on
the
under
the main line of the city, and the people on the phone or someone in the auditor's department will help you find the right page?
Yeah.
Or you can simply email in your comments to your city council members. I don't know if it goes the same place as if you click on the link, but I do notice that Portland Cop Watch always emails their comments in to the chief of police, the police commissioner, all the city council members. And they always CC, the NLG, and the ACLU.
And us.
Because that way, you're definitely on public record with your opinion.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for bringing this up, because it's been one of my issues. I am sometimes astonished that we say that we have freedom of speech here, and yet we use the most incredible weaponry on people. The last time that I was gassed was about 10 years ago, and I thought I was going to die. I got asthma so bad, and I could feel all my bronchia constrict, and I just, you know, sat there just not able to take in air for the longest time, and I have worth breathing now, so I don't go if I think they're going to use pepper spray, and that's an abridgment of my right to free speech. I am threatened away. Awesome. I'm threatened with bodily harm.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what I wanted to say is that, because Dan sends me this information all the time, and I'll post it on a page. I'll put like a picture of some protest, but I'll put his whole speech, you know, welcome cop watchers or high supporters. But what I've realized, and we did all the workshops, we used to tell everybody, like, we would keep a managed page of events for the city and all the connectedness. But the general public at large, they'll come out to the protests. They don't show up at these meetings. They don't call in. Mm-hmm. They don't do the emails. They won't do that work. And that, to me, seems a whole lot easier than being pepper sprayed out in the street and doing the whole 4.5 hours. So I'm just thinking, as an activist, like, wow, what if we could get all of those thousands of people that come out to these protests to actually do some of this footwork or to actually respond to some of these surveys and some of these polls? Because I got so dismayed with it that I said, well, you know what, wait a minute, I'm doing free marketing for these same agencies that are brutalizing us, and people aren't responding to it. We would show up, we would stream, people would come up sometimes, but it wasn't a consistent thing. We need leadership.
Well, it sounds like one of those things that we're going to need to, you know, well, I think we need all sorts of people, because I hear people say, oh, you know, it's not enough to sit there and push buttons or do emails, but of course we need it all. So thank you.
We need it all.
Thank you very much for calling in with that. Oh, go ahead.
I have to also say that, you know, the level 3 pepper spray that we are using in the state of Oregon is banned in 7 other states.
Wow.
It is in violation of Geneva Convention. The inventor of pepper spray has given multiple interviews to Democracy Now! And on other stations, decrying the use of his invention in crowd control. He's now listed as one of the top 5 inventors who regrets his invention. It was designed to save lives so that police would not have to use lethal force. It was not designed for use in crowd control at all. It's against Geneva Convention to use it in crowd control. It is a misuse. The OSHA-required MSDS sheets have never been shared with the Poison Control Center, have never been shared with the fire department, who's expected to put out a fire should that arsenal catch on fire. The police are negligent. There is no way for anyone to tell if you've been gassed or pepper sprayed if you show up at a primary caregiver or an emergency room or, you know, after the fact. They can't tell what you've been hit with.
So they're keeping the formulas private. I think it's really important.
Public. They are public and they are available, but they're specific to the vendor and the brand. So unless the police, I mean, like, I know they're using CS gas. Are they using nitrogen as the propellant? Or are they using that refrigerant called 134A? Well, if it's 134A and you use the wrong drug, it affects the lungs. If you use an epinephrine on them and they've inhaled 134A, they can go into cardiac arrest. So the fact that this information isn't, I mean, like, I don't know what the PPM is because I don't have the sheets.
Well, yeah, Teresa, yeah. You know what I think is important, Teresa, is that we need to weigh in on this issue and get them to realize that we want to stop them using any of these chemical or phony weapons on us. There's no business spraying us when we're out, you know, using our free speech. And so I think it's important that people weigh in on that, and you've given us that information.
And I was going to say, Teresa, I know you'll probably be downtown today at 11. bring some information, and especially about that group Empower PDX, so that people can get involved. Let's see if people's attitudes about involvement have changed.
What's happening at 11, Teresa?
We're protesting today. It's not my president's day.
That's what you're protesting. Where are you going to be at 11?
The Edith Wyden Green Federal Building, right there in, across the street from the Portland Justice Center.
Okay, so at 11 o'clock, you can get down and say, not my President's Day, which I completely agree with. Do we have another caller on the line? Okay, we don't have another caller. Let me put the number out there, because I know you're out there and you want to call and you think, oh, the lines are all full. It's 503-231-8187. Weigh in on the shooting of Qantas Hayes. Weigh in on how our police are handling protests here in the city. But let's talk a lot about, let's not forget about Qantas Hayes and what do we want to see happen? I mean, like, let's start building. What do we want to see happen about the investigation into this? Why don't we demand a special prosecutor now?
Exactly.
You know, we can all go to our city council and say, we want a special prosecutor. We want to take this out of the hands that it's normally in, because we want to find out what really happened in these incidents. I wanted to bring up a couple other things, Teresa, that I think they do to influence how people feel about these. They use language that so they say they suspected that he was part of an armed robbery. The armed robbery was taking a food stamp card. I'm assuming that if he did that, they could find it on his body after he was dead and prove it. I'm thinking that was just a throw up. That was just something they said to justify their chasing down and shooting this young man that they did see out in the after dark. Well, they saw him out after dark. That's all we really know in a location. And so I think when they say things like armed robbery, they're intending for you, the public, to think, well, okay, I was going to feel bad about this, but now I can't feel bad, because if he was robbing someplace and he had a gun, mm-hmm. I mean, maybe he does not deserve to die, but, and they throw all these doubts and questions into our minds. And I just want to put it out there, even if he did do the crime they said he was suspected of having done, that would be a very, very, very light sentence and would not be death. That would not be
capital punishment.
No, capital punishment would not be what was there for that crime. And that he is dead, I think it's going to be really hard for them to come up with justification. We do know that this cop has shot and killed someone before. I don't know anything about this cop in general, but I would think, I would hope he would resign. I mean, how does it feel to be in these circumstances anyway, killing someone's 17-year-old son? The other thing I wanted to bring up for us to discuss is the feds like to use this a lot, and they use it when they let cops off. They say he had a reasonable fear of his death, a reasonable fear for his life. That's a very different standard than probable cause to believe he would be killed. Probable cause is the former legal stance that you had to have to take certain actions, and you had to be able to show why you could say it was likely that person was to harm me. They've changed it to the police just to say it was reasonable for me to feel surprised. I mean, to feel scared. All they have to add is, in a racist society like I live in, I am scared. You know, because that's really what they're doing. They're saying, we've raised you up through media and the whole oppressive system to be fearful of black people, so now it's justified if you kill them. I'd like others out there in the audience to speak to this. I want to hear, Teresa, what you think about that, because they have made that standard. I now hear that standard, reasonable fear for life.
That standard has been out
used across the nation in the last, like, 5 years or so. It's become the standard. And yet, what does that mean?
It means that bad people are brown people.
That's right. That's what they're saying.
And that the standard of being able to protect yourself is going to be provided by the police. And when you vote to make sure that they're fully funded and that they have everything they have to keep you protected and safe. It means don't feel bad when gentrification happens, because we removed the blight and now you're safe and secure. And if you see them, we'll have a community agreement and we'll make sure that we partner around that area where they show up and we'll shuffle them out. That's where you get the profiling. All of it is based on an economic need of power and patriarchy. And so we have to understand that we're not crazy when we feel that way, but we're crazy and lazy if we don't do anything about it, period.
All right. Have we got any callers yet? Well, that's interesting that we haven't. We're not drawing you guys. Please give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. It's 503-231-8187. It's a Monday morning here in Portland. Another day with many, many things happening all around the country and around the world that draw our attention. Many, many different calls for justice that have our attention. But I'm asking us to have our attention right here on Quanis Hayes. If you didn't hear much about the shooting, this is a young man who, by his friends, they said he just lit up a room. They were so shocked to hear he was shot. Yeah. He was the kind of young man who you could go and talk to, when you're a teenager and how those friendships are so intense.
Yeah, well, when I got the call from his family in regards to the situation, his death, the first thing that I did as an organizer was you refer them to legal support, because in these circumstances, that's the most important thing to do. I mean, to me, even today, I'm a victim survivor of gun violence. A lot of the people that I advocate for have gun violence, whether it's a domestic violence issue, whether it's a police brutality issue, or whether it's a community violence issue. There's always this whole paradigm of the guns being a part of it. And so when people respond to activists for help, it lets me know that there's still not a system in place to deal directly with that type of violence or that type of situation when it happens to families. So my thoughts were like, okay, let's get you a legal representative, because whatever happens, we already know by the morning they're going to criminalize your child. And within a couple of minutes, I pulled the TV on and there's a mugshot and there's this man in his 20s. And I'm like, wait a minute, they just told me he's a small yes. child, 17 years old. Really?
Yeah.
There's man in his 20s in this mugshot that they put out, and the police is safe right now. We don't have anything else to worry about, and the officers involved are now safe, and they'll be on administrative leave, and all that's normal and necessary, and the public is safe. And it was like, wow, immediately. The family's probably not even been notified, but the way that you put this information out there, this isn't even a human being. Why didn't we say, officers involved in a shooting of a teenager, a teenage suspect, not this brutal, fierce monster,
This armed robbery suspect.
Right. The framing is basically to help adjust public opinion and then also to have the jury come in and indict the victim rather than the officer.
And I think it's so important that family and friends do speak out. I know that just to give our evening news props on the 14th, about 5 days after Quanis died, we did have one of his friends, Shamaya Ibi Velasquez, come on and speak with Evening News with Jenna Yokoyama. You can look that up. You can put in Quanis Hayes' name in our search at kboo.fm, and one of the choices that you'll get will be that evening news on February 14th, and the story about Quanis starts there. But if you want to hear what one of his friends is experiencing, the sadness and the shock that she's feeling from every day having her friend Quanis to talk to when things got tough, to him being gone. We know that there's an all-out push to try to make someone like Quanis be someone that we can feel okay about killing, or okay that somebody else killed him in our government for us. But there's nothing that can make us feel okay about that.
Organizers that work with us, Loretta Ray, she's a young lady that's been working with us. She used to work at Matt Dishman, and she says she used to see him all the time. He had come in. He was
just
light
and happy.
And
see, people people, if they know him that way, that's mm-hmm. who he was. Let's have that be on the front page.
His uncle.
I saw some beautiful pictures of him where he looked like that.
Well, I saw that you posted the art by Amia Marie, and she's a 16-year-old student that's been working with Don't Shoot Portland, and she created this art piece of one of the photos that she saw on the Let's Not Forget Him page. And I mean, it went viral within hours, and it was just a very compassionate rendition of who he was and what his life could have been like. And I don't think that we think about that. I think when we see these headlines, it's easy to detach ourselves just when that mugshot detaches.
Yeah, just seeing the mugshot or hearing suspect in armed robbery.
It makes it hard for you even to yourself. Like, you can share it and have your words, and then people demonize you for sharing it. I noticed on our page immediately, people were like, are you serious? I used to be down with you guys, but now you guys are supporting this guy. He had a gun, for heaven's sake. And I'm like, really?
You don't know that.
They didn't say that he brandished a weapon. They didn't say that he pointed a weapon. They didn't even say he had a weapon. They said they found a replica near his body. These same officers say, we have tons of replicas in our office. We have replicas in our cars. Well, why are you running around with replicas? And how in 11 hours did you find two replica guns? Like, come on.
For two different shootings.
So
yeah, it to me it sounds like business as usual in Portland, and we're kind of fed up with business as usual in Portland.
Yeah.
We've been fed up for a while.
Get involved.
Yeah, get involved and give us a call here at KBOO. It's 503-231-8187, and we have Arlene on the line. Good morning, yeah. Arlene.
Yeah, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, I just wanted to mention, in Wisconsin, a number of years ago, Michael Bell's son was killed by the police, and Michael Bell went on a decade-long crusade with some other folks whose loved ones had also been killed by the police. And the crusade was to create a system whereby if there's an officer-involved shooting, that it immediately goes to a special prosecutor. And after a decade, it went through the legislative process and it became law, and Scott Walker actually signed that in law. So I would really like to see something like that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I just hope there's some kind of activism around that as well. I can't stay on the line right now. I have an appointment, but I just wanted to mention that because I think that's another piece of it that we sometimes don't put enough focus on. I don't think we can just ask the city council or ask the county not to have the DA.
As Don't Shoot Portland, we've been asking legislators and our state leaders to give us a special prosecutor since 2014, and so we're going to continue asking and ask, like, maybe the ACLU or National Lawyers Guild to help us formulate that language so that we can get a direct response.
You might want to look up the Michael Bell law, because it's very specific, and he'd probably even be willing to help.
That's
so
beautiful.
Anyway,
thank you.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Have you noticed, Teresa, how many great women have been calling in with information?
Women,
yeah, we like the men, too. We like those guys, too. But I just got, women are really coming through in the world today and giving us very practical information. So that was the Michael Bell law that got special prosecutors to go look into police shootings in Wisconsin. So if any of you want to look that up, that's another way to get that information. And I'm feeling like I'm learning a lot here about these struggles that are going on everywhere. And I don't know about you, Teresa, but I feel a little bit, with so much going on in the world, that sometimes it's hard to stop and focus in on one thing that matters so much. And we have to be able to take some time and focus to be able to get some change.
Absolutely. Well, that's where intersectionality comes in. You hear that word a lot lately, and I don't think that people have the same definitions of what it looks like. But in my, wish world, in my dream world, it would look like a system whereby I say that I have an issue, and then other connected agencies or organizations that have the same focus and goals can see how our work can be useful in their goals and their bottom lines, and all of us at the same time, because we benefit both ways.
And I've seen how you've gone to each other's events. Different organizations are collaborating and coming together, seeing that they have the same enemy, and often have at base want the same changes.
Well, we've always told everybody, come out, bring your own banners, bring your information. happen, and we always have open mic at our protests. We never have a speakers list. We always just say, hey, who has something to say? And we call our gatherings community action plans. So hopefully that'll become infectious.
Yeah, I remember you did a really great one at Dawson Park that I went to that had families
involved. Oh, We Do Matter.
That was really good. We do have more callers, though. So we have Marcos on the line.
Yes, hello. I just wanted to come in after the caller before that was talking about unusual crowd control techniques. There have been protests all through the Bush years, often meeting with a violent police response. That was basically pepper spray. It was fascinating to hear that pepper spray was never really intended as a crowd control device by the person that invented it.
Yeah.
But we have a new wrinkle, and that's rubber bullets. And as far as I know, also unprecedented use of gas, whether that's tear gas or CS. That hasn't really been seen on the streets of Portland at any protest, no matter how militant. I was talking to a staffer at Mayor Ted Wheeler's office a few days after the protest on the night of the inauguration, which was met with a very violent police response. That was the day before the Women's March.
Mm-hmm.
The Women's March, as we all know, went well. There was 100,000 people, so they weren't going to attack that. But the protest the night before was attacked with rubber bullets. And what disturbed me the most was to hear Ted Wheeler's staffer justify the use of firing rubber bullets at people because they're not complying with police orders, such as get off the street. So a militant protest in Portland is going to be, people are going to want to be taking the street. That is now, the threshold has been lowered that we can be attacked with rubber bullets. And just to put a fine point on it, there's a picture that was online the day after that protest showing a fella wearing glasses who had a bruise mark on his cheek caused by a rubber bullet. It could have taken out his eye. Because it was off by an inch or two. So that's now being normalized. That's being justified by Mayor Ted Wheeler, our fresh, brand-new mayor, who would, I'm sure, like to present a liberal and progressive persona to the public.
Well, this guy, I'm going to tell you now, even before, I think it may have been a week before his inauguration, he invited us, and I'll say us, people in the black community with influence, to an event at Wieden Kennedy that was very generic in its invitation. And when we got there, they were basically unleashing this whole campaign called the First 100 Days, which included billboards and tweets for Mayor Ted Wheeler. And what we were supposed to do was pre-endorse his leadership. You know, and the proposal that they gave us in the slideshow, and it even presented photos of us being beat up at City Hall and talking about how his new leadership was going to be a brand new brand for Oregon, and Portlanders were going to be able to engage with him on Twitter, and the engagement would be pushed throughout the city so that other people could benefit from that relationship, and that it was going to help us all be focused on social justice and working together. And I thought to myself, I said, wait a minute, you know, I said, you're going to be the police commissioner, and you're asking a police accountability activist to pre-endorse you on your ability to lead, and you haven't yet done it. I was like, well, as mayor, why don't I challenge you to give the Bureau of Police Commissioner to one of the other commissioners? Why not Chloe? And at that point, they shut down the opportunity for the conversation to continue. So I don't think that, you know, he's any different from Charlie. I think that by Charlie Hills pushing forward with the police contract, that he gave Ted the opportunity to say, I didn't do that. And I think that Ted is going to do whatever he likes to do, but we're going to still go out there and we're going to do free speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of expression. We're going to have our National Lawyers Guild legal observers with us. We're going to have the ACLU legal observers with us. They observe the police, not us. So I hope that they're mindful of that. And we're going to do what is constitutionally right and what's necessary during this Trump presidency.
And for all of you who can't get out and demonstrate, and to Marcos's point about the weapons, if you have Facebook, put PPB, Portland Police Bureau Special Weaponry, in the search, and you will get a page that's going to allow you to directly comment. It's only between now and I think about five more days on the use of these, the 25th, on the use of these weapons. So, you know, get out and do that. It's so important. If you can't find it there, you can just send a letter directly to City Council, an email to City Council saying you do not want the use of rubber bullets or chemical weapons on people in Portland. So thank you so much, Marcos. We've got some other callers, and we've only got a few more minutes, so let's go to our next one. Jack, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I know you don't have much time. I'll keep it short. These conversations always bring up in my mind the dialogue from Orson Welles, I think, 58 or 1960, I can't remember the year exactly, film A Touch of Evil. Takes place on the border, at a border town between U.S. and Mexico, and there's the Mexican lieutenant who is getting swept up in this corrupt sheriff's operation there. And he's being reminded how tough a policeman's job is. And we hear that. We've heard that all our lives, how tough the policeman's job is. And his reply is, a policeman's job is only tough or hard in a police state. Hmm. It's only easy, I should say. The policeman's job is only easy in a police state. So I keep that in mind, and at the protests, I encourage people to watch out for the provocateurs. The provocateurs who are often cops themselves, dressed like the guys in the hood, and they're going to come out and make trouble and give the casus belli to start a war on the protesters.
Well, thank you for your comments, and it turns out that we now have 30 seconds left exactly, so I really want to thank you, Teresa Rayford. Oh, I really do know how to say your name, Teresa.
No, nothing. Thank you a lot, and I just wanted to say, you know, justice to Quantas Hayes and our entire community. And
keep your eyes on that case. They're going to make it drag out a little bit. But we want a special prosecutor for Quantas Hayes. I think that's one thing we should definitely leave today with. And thank you, all of you listeners, for listening to KBOO. And now we'll be going on to the Old Mole Variety Hour.
Right on. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Teresa.
Good morning, it's 8:59, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up at 9 o'clock on the OMO Variety Hour, topics include Trumpism and fascism, lessons learned from Standing Rock, and court decisions on Trump's Muslim ban. At 10:15, it's Locus Focus. Barbara Bernstein hosts this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. At 11 on Radio Zine, Veterans for Peace discuss the departure of Flynn from the Trump administration, then a celebration of Black History Month with a look back at Muhammad Ali and the Freedom Fighters. And that's all because of generous donators like you, KBOO members. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on donate. It's 9 o'clock.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Underground Grad School. Classes that begin in March include Introduction to Music Theory, A Moment of Possibility, Finding Opportunity in Our Differences, Financial Freedom, Getting Empowered About Money in Your Life, and more. Portland Underground Grad School is also known as PUGS. Classes take place all over Portland metro area. Information about registering, teaching classes, and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Mukasa Rick Speaks, Why White People Were Asked to Leave the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee in 1966. On Tuesday, February 21st at 5:30 p.m. at the Portland State University Smith Center Room 338 in Portland, Mukasa was an organizer for the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. He continues today to advance the concept of Pan-Africanism, which is the evolution of the Black Power movement of the 1960s. Again, that's Mukasa Rick Speaks, Why White People Were Asked to Leave the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee in 19... 19-